This is Christopher, and I want to welcome you to the Time Shifters Podcast. This podcast takes a fun look at the films of long past, recent past, and the almost present, as well as the events and news surrounding them. Matt and I would love to hear from you, and there are several ways to get in touch with us. Look for the Time Shifters Podcast group on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Time Shifters Pod, and Matt is at Movies at the Matt. And you can send us a typed or recorded message to timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify. Please rate and review the show at any of those outlets. Now, let's head to the Time Shifter studio and start the show. Everyone, welcome back. We are back in studio. Matt is here. Welcome, Matt.
Hey.
We were supposed to have Floyd today. He was really looking forward to coming in and talking with us about this film, but unfortunately, he just scheduling conflicts and stuff that he, you know, obligations that he had that just prevented him from being here, but we'll hear from him a little later in some audio that he recorded. So, yeah, okay. It's been a couple weeks. I finally got my 31 Nights of Halloween podcast out.
Saw that.
So everyone can hear and see what I was watching over the course of the month. It was a lot of fun. Once I actually finally started kind of typing everything out, it came together pretty quick. And so I was thinking, well, maybe I'll get it out next week or something like yeah, but then it's going to be like mid-November by that point. So I was like, okay, 2 days after the first episode, we're just going to go ahead and throw it out.
It's always a good time for horror.
Exactly. It was a lot of fun. Some good films, I hope, you know. And like I said in that show, if anyone, you know, has any thoughts on those films or whatever, or my brief take on the movies or whatever, you know, drop me a line or, you know, come on the Facebook or Twitter and everything and let me know what you think. So we got a couple stories. One trailer that I saw, which I wanted to mention. They're making a movie based on the television show Fantasy Island.
There is an elevator. In the elevator, you press the button to the floor with no name. Behind those doors, there's a life you always dreamt of.
The plane. It's here. This weekend, you will be our guests.
Here, anything and everything is possible.
No service. It's not everything is possible.
Good evening. I'm Mr. Rurik. Let me officially welcome you to Fantasy Island.
Curious how this all works.
What if your fantasy involves a person from your life?
Holograms, like Tupac.
What if it's somebody who died?
Tupac.
So, what's your fantasy?
Revenge on a childhood bully.
Your life is about to change. I hope you're ready.
Really good hologram.
There is only one fantasy per guest. And you must see your fantasy through.
It brought her back to life.
No matter what.
Oh my God. That's really her.
Work. This is not what I meant.
What the hell is this place?
People die here.
The island's twisting what we asked for.
We weren't brought here to have our own fantasies.
I want it. I got it. I want it.
We were brought here to be a part of someone else.
I got it. I want it. I got it.
I'm your friend.
I've always wanted to hear you say that.
I find this interesting because other than a brief attempt at rebooting the series on television in the 90s, I think, maybe late 90s with Malcolm McDowell, no one knows anything about Fantasy Island except for the 1970s series,
mm-hmm.
which was, it was just a television. It was, I don't know, were you familiar with the series at all? Have you ever seen anything?
Just vaguely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it was kind of like sort of like The Love Boat. It was like stars of the day would show up and kind of guest star, and they get to relive some fantasy that they had. And usually it was a television show in the 70s. So it was all usually pretty mundane kind of stuff. Long lost loves, or what would happen if they had taken that big job, or you know, things like that. It's been a long time since I've watched any of the show. The 90s, they went a little darker. They really added some mystery into the island. They added some mysticism almost, kind of made it much more fantasy, much more magical, which I didn't dislike. That series was actually, I think, had it been given a little bit of a chance, it probably, maybe it was a little ahead of its time, but I probably could see where it would do really well now. Now, this trailer that comes out, it just feels like, oh, look, another horror movie. I like where they kind of how they set it up, where people are just think they're living out some fantasies, and then suddenly they realize that what's happening is real. Like someone wants kind of like revenge on that high school bully, and now they suddenly find out that what's happening is really happening. Somehow that high school bully is like in front of them being tortured. And they realize what's going on.
Sounds like Saw.
Yeah, it's a little bit like a Saw or a Hostel. And it's like, But I started talking with some people on Facebook about this. Is there more to this film than what's in the trailer? This is either, they've either completely ruined the idea and just turned it into another horror movie, or it's a really bad trailer. Mm. I'd like to think that maybe there's more to this film, that people are going to go, maybe someone will go thinking they're just going to get a horror film, and they're going to get a little bit more, oh, we got to think about this.
Sure.
Which I'm hopeful for. I'm kind of curious to see when this comes out. Unfortunately, it's not one I'm going to spend movie theater dollars on, but I'm going to be curious to see what comes out as far as reviews and people who do see it and what their thoughts are, because I'm hopeful that maybe there's more to this.
Straight to DVD.
Yeah, or that'll happen. Yeah. So, yeah, very interesting. It's just, either way, it's like I'm not exactly sure why they chose now to try to bring up something that people won't have any memory of. I mean, even...
Maybe that's the goal, is like there's not much of an audience for this, so no one's going to bring their baggage in. We've got a clean slate.
Could be. That's true. But then why even call it... Fantasy Island. I don't know. Yeah, we shall see. News, though. Original Teen Titans animated series is going to be coming to Blu-ray, I think, in December. This is exciting because I'd actually really like a chance to watch this and kind of erase the little bit of Teen Titans Go that I've seen. I think I was amazed at that series. It was one of those series that I just sort of stumbled on, and I watched a little. I kind of came in like in the middle of a story. And what's really impressed me about Teen Titans, the original series, is it's episodic television, but it's like season arcs. There's an entire story and like a main story, and then occasionally they'll throw in sort of standalones, but there's always something tying back to that bigger story. I'm like, that's impressive for an animated show to do with something like that. And once I kind of got on board with like the story, I couldn't stop watching that show. And then my son starts watching Teen Titans Go, and I take one look at that, and I'm like, what the hell is this?
That's pretty much everybody's reaction to those two shows.
I cannot stand that Teen Titans Go. It's just awful. And the fact that they still have the same voice actors, just, it's like, What was it like, that meeting around the table when they came to like, okay, well, Teen Titans is done, but we want you to do this. And when they started reading that script, well, you're paying me.
And didn't Teen Titans like end unfinished? Like, I know they brought it back recently, but didn't it end like on a big cliffhanger and then the show got canceled and then they're like, Teen Titans Go?
I don't recall. Okay. Yeah, I don't remember.
So all I know of that is there's an episode of Teen Titans Go where the team meets some kind of like fanboy who shows them the old show.
They sit and
watch it, and they're like, look how good we look. Wow. And then it ends and they're like, wait, that's it? That's all that happens? It just ends, and then the guy's like, yes, and I'm going to do the same to you, and it's the scariest thing they've ever faced. And I'm like, that's really clever writing.
I've heard that from actual fans of Teen Titans Go that say that it's actually really clever if you watch, and it's like, yeah, I have, and no, it's not. I've seen some kids' shows that are incredibly clever. Amazing World of Gumball, I think, is really clever. Teen Titans Go is not that.
Okay. I haven't watched either. I'd never watched Teen Titans because I heard that it just sort of got canceled and ended, and I didn't want to get invested in something that I knew was going to end. And I think the new season is on, like, the DC Universe streaming thing, which I don't have, so I'm still in the same boat of, like, well, I'm not going to finish it, so here I am.
Yeah, I don't recall, because as much as a series that I did watch and I got involved in and everything, it wasn't one that I was able to stick with through the entire run. So I probably saw like a few seasons, and maybe two or three seasons right in the middle. And I think it's a 6-season run. It was like 65 episodes or something. So I've maybe seen 25 or 30 of those episodes, maybe.
Okay. Maybe I'm thinking of Young Justice.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So the bit of news I have, I don't know if you heard about this, there's a studio that wants to, through the use of CGI, bring back James Dean.
Now, I hear that's actually going to happen. They've gotten, I think, didn't they actually get the okay from his family?
Yeah. I don't like that.
No.
I don't like that. I didn't even really like it when they did it with Peter Cushing in...
Star Wars?
Yeah, because... Yeah, it might look like him, and you might get a voice actor that sounds just like him, but you're not going to get him. You're not going to get how he would act in this role, how he would, you know, would he come up and be like, well, can I say it this way? Can we change the wording a little bit? His body language, you're just going to get an interpretation of his interpretation. So you're not really going to get what you're supposed to get.
Right.
So what are we doing here?
Yeah. No, that's a really good point, because I was going to say this really kind of starts setting a precedence that they could bring back. Who else could they bring back?
You would never have to cast an actor again. You can just go through history and be like, oh, yeah, we're going to have James Dean act opposite of Meryl Streep. Like,
right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they could bring back, you know, I think this is a role that was made for Humphrey Bogart. Let's do it, you know.
Right.
And suddenly you got Humphrey Bogart, and... First of all, how's the hell that's going to look on IMDb?
Right. Who's actually getting the casting credit here?
Right. So, yeah, but that's a good point that it's still not going to be them. You can take guesses at how you think they would perform.
Right.
But it's not going to be the same thing.
No.
And what happens if, whatever reason, some director actually really nails it with one of these, you know, creations, and it's just like, oh my gosh, that's the greatest thing, that's the greatest role, but where does that Oscar go to if they want to give it an Oscar?
Exactly.
You know, does it go to Andy Serkis, who was in the mocap? Does it go to the special effects department?
Does it go to the voice actor?
Yeah. Does it just go posthumously to the actor that is being portrayed?
Nothing to do with this.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then you also get things like, you know, someone like James Dean, who only was in, I think, what, 3 movies before he died? So what exactly are you recreating? What mannerisms? Like, you have a small sample to work with there. So imagine if this kept going and they kept using him. Well, now we're just going to see the same set of mannerisms and whatnot over and over and over and over again. And we don't even get James Dean, the person, evolving as an actor, evolving as a human being, and trying new things. We're just going to get the same thing over and over and over again. And if you go back to any actor, even if with a bigger sample, like, okay, what version of such and such an actor through their 40-year career are you going to use? And is, you know, are you going to use, you know, young whoever to show in this, even though that's not how they would have done it when they were 60 or 70 or 80 or however old they were when they died. And now you're just, you're Frankensteining this thing just to get what you want.
If you're going to use this technology, I think an interesting use of this technology is if you wanted to, like, go back to a classic film and tell, like, a story within that movie's universe. I was just thinking, I mentioned Humphrey Bogart. there's lots of people that visit Rick's Cafe in Casablanca. Could you tell a story that took place at one of those tables in Casablanca and just have the events of Casablanca taking place around that story?
That would be cool.
Could you get, you know, the permission of the, you know, of Bogart's family and Claude Rains's family, and have those people and recreate that around you still going on where you don't change anything? Or maybe you can have one additional scene or a few additional kind of scenes that connect it where you don't really need to, like, okay, what would he have done here? Because you know, he was in this movie.
Right.
That would be an interesting use of this technology.
Sure.
I would like that.
Taking the performance that already happened.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Without actually trying to create something that wasn't there before.
Yeah. That's a clever idea. I think mm-hmm. that's a smarter and more responsible use of that technology.
Yeah.
And then the other part of it is, it's like, what James Dean audience is out there that is like, oh, he's coming back?
Right.
Like, come on.
Just calm down, Grandma.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. It's, I understand when you get a new technology, you want to use it, and you want to see how far you can push it.
Right.
But I don't know. I feel like it's kind of like the Spider-Man quote, you know, with great power comes great responsibility.
Exactly.
You got to make sure you're doing it right.
Mm-hmm. And then it's a necessary thing to say, go watch the movie Simone, because it deals with this thing where he makes a whole fake actress out of this supercomputer, and it becomes this thing of, like, he's the only one that knows she's not real, but then the world starts to believe she's real. So if we recreate any of these actors, is it going to end there?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they going to start using these actors and these computers and these AIs to give an interview?
Right.
To accept their award. To do this, to start sending any kind of message, to do any kind of advertisement,
mm-hmm.
how far is too far?
Right. So, yeah, an actor can just sit at home and sign on and then just send his avatar to do his work.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Slippery slope.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll see how this pans out. Well, and it, the big tell is going to be, how well does this film do?
I hope it bombs.
Yeah. No, if it bombs, yeah, then it's going to be like, well,
that didn't work.
Yeah, we're not going to bother doing that. That's going to go.
There's no way that was cheap.
It's going to go the way of the 3D, how everything mm-hmm. was 3D, and then it's kind of like, yeah, I don't really care. And
right.
And those dollars weren't coming in, and that sort of faded away. And you know, some films are still like that, but they're not advertised like they used to be. You
right.
know? So same thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you might see a rash of this. I could, you know, but I think unless the money starts rolling in, it's just going to fade away.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a few actors that are acting now that maybe 50 years from now you could probably recreate, because they're the kind of actors that, well, they're just the same person in every role. You're kind of hiring just the person. You're not getting an acting job. You just want that person. Maybe you could definitely make them up, but you got to wait a while.
Right. So only other bit of news I have is this week, Disney Plus came out.
Right. Yeah, I was going to mention, I saw you subscribed.
I
yes.
did.
You did not have any issues. I understand there's a lot of people that were having some, it was flaky for them, but
yeah,
then just as many were like, I don't have an issue.
Right. I wasn't having any issues. I was at work the day it came out, so I was able to just sit back and just kind of follow everyone's like, this is going wrong, that's going wrong. I'm like, right. It's day one of something, you know, millions of people are trying to log on at the same time. Why are you surprised? And I kind of got annoyed because I saw actual media professionals complaining, and I'm like, okay, you know better.
Right.
Be quiet. You know that this wasn't going to work on the first day.
Mm-hmm.
That was inevitable. The things that kind of bothered me was certain animated shows, like the big one everyone was talking about was The Simpsons, but there were other animated shows that were created in 4:3 aspect ratio were not recreated at that. They stretched them to 16:9.
No.
And cropped and stretched the image. So you get a show like The Simpsons that's all about the sight gags a lot of the gags weren't there.
Cut off. Yeah. They're at the bottom of the screen because they blew it up and to fill the width.
And it's like, how does Disney make that mistake?
Yeah.
Like, okay, so there's a whole... I know there's like a big divide out there about whether or not you should crop and stretch a 4x3, and then there's those who say yes and those who say no. The people who say yes, they're the ones that are like, everything looks better in widescreen. And it's like, that's not how it was created. It can't look better. Oh, but it should fit my screen. No, it shouldn't. But I don't like the black bars on the side. Well, get over it.
Right.
You're supposed to preserve this for what it's, how it was made.
You know,
made.
Your TV's probably got a zoom or a feature. You can
stretch it.
You can zoom it up yourself if you
exactly.
want. Yeah. If you want to watch something distorted, your TV will do that.
Right. So they've heard the backlash, and they're going to slowly start fixing the episodes. And it's funny because the same week that this came out, I just started rewatching my Blu-ray copy of Batman the Animated Series, 4x3.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do any of that. You've got the black bars on the side. It looks beautiful.
Right.
I love it. And then over here, I'm hearing all this these complaints, and I'm like, why would Disney, of all companies, the company that says we are creators first, we are filmmakers first, why would they do that to an animated image?
It's a really bizarre choice. It, you wonder if it was, I don't know, you almost want to chalk it up to, oh, whoops, we didn't realize. Or
the people who were in charge of transferring it were younger, and they have that mentality of, widescreen's automatically better.
Right.
No, it's not.
Do they just put something in a hot folder that automatically, and they were just, you know, oh, we need everything to go to this server, so just put it in this hot folder and it takes care of it, and within that hot folder it...
Does it. Yeah.
And they weren't, they didn't know better, or they didn't realize or something, because, that's just, no. I mean...
Yeah.
I'll dial something up, an old television show or something, you know, whether it's on DVD or streaming or whatever, and there's that split second where you're like, huh? Oh, yeah, of course. You know, that you see the bars and you're like, oh, it's square. Oh, well, yeah, because it's...
And then they vanish on you.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't even see
exactly.
Them.
Yeah, because you forget it. Like, oh, yeah, this was 1986. You know,
yeah. Because, you know, the side of your TV is likely black. Those bars are just going to fade into it. And all you're going to focus is on the picture.
Right.
But, yeah, it's not just The Simpsons. It's a bunch of other shows. And I'm just thinking, like, wow, how do you make that mistake? Come on. Fix it. Yeah. Fix it all.
Yeah, that's terrible. I'd rather watch something that was designed in 4x3 as 4x3. Rather do that than, you know, unfortunately, occasionally you watch something that is supposed to be widescreen, but for whatever reason, it's still broadcast in 4x3.
Yeah.
And like I said, like I was saying, like DirecTV, the CW is still standard def. It's not HD. And we watch all the CW shows, and they're 4x3. So, yeah, there's always people reaching out of frame. And it's really frustrating. For the longest time, we would watch, or you could watch even something that was done in widescreen, but you could see that they would move the credits and everything to where you could tell that they would appear on a 4x3 frame.
Mm.
I've noticed that a lot of shows don't bother doing that anymore.
We don't care.
It's really fallen. That 4x3 has just really fallen to the wayside now, and everyone's got the widescreens. And so, we'll turn on and, directed by something Smith. You know, we don't know.
Yeah. So that to me is the only, like, grievance I have of, like, that you should know better. You're Disney.
Surprised there was I saw a few people, some people were looking for some older Disney films and weren't finding them. They're a little annoyed. Some of the original Disney films from like the 70s and stuff, they weren't, like Watcher in the Woods, they couldn't find.
Disney never said everything they've ever done is going up there or will stay up there. They are a streaming service. Things are going to cycle around like every...
Netflix or Prime or anything else.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, they still have contracts out there. So like every Marvel movie is not on there because they still have contracts with Netflix. So they can't put them on there.
Right.
Every Star Wars movie is not up there. But they have, if you search for it, it'll bring up a little tile and it will tell you when it's coming. Some it's next year, some it's 2021 because they've got long contracts. So it's like, You're a streaming service like any other. They mm-hmm. do have one feature that I like, and it's called like Disney Through the Decades. So you go up to like the 1930s, and you can see everything that they have available that came out that decade.
Oh, nice.
You go to the 40s, and so it's everything. It's not just movies. It's every short. It's every cartoon. It's whether it's Star Wars, Marvel, mm-hmm. whatever. You just go to that decade, and you start scrolling through, and you can see the progress, and it's really, really cool.
Yeah, that's very interesting. There's definitely going to be a streaming service that's going to be around, that's going to last. You know, you always wonder when a new, you know, network or a studio or whatever starts something. How's this one going to go?
Yeah.
Disney Plus ain't going anywhere.
No, it's not.
And yeah, I do think you will see all the stuff that you don't see now will come around eventually, because mm-hmm. there are a lot of people that want to see that stuff. And yeah, it'll pop back up. You just gotta give it time.
Right.
Who knows? Maybe even the Star Wars holiday special will make its appearance.
Yeah, and I think, you know, they just have all these movies and all this stuff that people know to get your attention, but I think it's the original programming that they want to keep people there for.
Right.
So I plan to watch that new Star Wars show, The Mandalorian. I heard it's good. First two episodes are out. I've
not heard anyone disparage it yet. Yeah, right. Most everyone's been really excited about it.
So I look forward to watching that. I haven't watched it yet, but...
Yeah, and I also heard that they are actually doing that weekly. And mm-hmm. it is not something yep. you can't just
right. You'd have to wait.
Binge it all and then like cancel it until the next season or something.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. So you gotta stick around. They're doing it smart. I think Disney's actually kind of watched and they've looked and they've seen what other people are doing or how they've treated the different streaming services.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay.
And I also think
it's better. Learned.
Yeah, they've learned. And I think it's better to do that because then you turn things into an event. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, did you catch the newest episode? If you watch it all on a weekend, by the next weekend, you're not talking about it anymore.
Right.
So now with like that countdown of those episodes, it's like the finale is in 4 days. Can you believe it?
Mm-hmm.
That builds the hype and people get involved in it bigger and better.
And when that next season rolls around. And,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that takes you back to the days of the old network when, you know, there used to be seasons and
yeah.
you know, now you wait for 6 months until that show comes back and mm-hmm. just watch the reruns.
Right.
At least with the streaming services now, you get more than just reruns to watch.
Yep. So that's all the news I have. I took in three movies the last couple of weeks.
Oh, wow.
I went and saw The Current War, which is a movie that was made and released in 2017, and then I can't remember what production company it was, but I think they like went out of business, so it never got the big distribution that it was supposed to have.
Okay. The Current War, you
the
said?
The Current War. So it is about Westinghouse versus Edison
to
bring electricity to the country.
I did hear about this briefly, yeah.
It's a good movie. You also have Nikola Tesla as a character in it, who I never knew this. I mean, I don't know how historically accurate this thing is, but he actually worked for Edison
mm-hmm.
when
yeah,
he first
true, yeah.
came to the country. I didn't know that. But the movie was good. The acting was great. There was this one weird thing, because it's told over a period of like 12 years, but they don't do anything to age up the characters. Like, you see Edison's kids who look like they're like 8, 9 years old at the beginning of the movie, and at the end of the movie, they're maybe in their early teens. I'm like, no, they'd be in their 20s by now, and they don't look it. You've got Tom Holland in the movie, who at the beginning is Edison's personal secretary, and then it's 12 years later, and somebody's like, oh my gosh, look at him. He's just a little boy. I'm like, it's 12 years later. He looks the same.
Right.
Get it together. But at the end of the movie, the message was, you know, we didn't have to go to war with each other. We didn't have to compete. We could have worked together and everyone would have benefited from it,
mm-hmm.
us included. And it ends on that message of like, yeah, we don't have to divide ourselves to see who's the better company.
Right.
We can work together. And I liked that.
Yeah, no, the whole Edison, Tesla, Tesla did indeed work for Edison. Tesla improved a lot of the electrical systems and everything that Edison had or his people had invented. Tesla's the one that came up with the AC power idea. And there was a war between Edison, who thought DC was best and safer and everything. And Tesla was like, AC's the future.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big battle. I don't know how much they get into that within the film, but
Tesla was a minor character in the film. It was more about Edison and Westinghouse.
Okay. Well, Westinghouse is they bought Tesla's technology.
That's not how they showed it in the in this movie. They made it seem as though it was something that was out there. They didn't really talk about who invented what. They just was like, well, AC's better than DC, and Edison's being like, well, DC's safer, and Westinghouse being like, it's not going to last if you do that. And that was like the divide of like whose stuff was better, whose stuff was safer, who's going to, you know, power America kind of thing.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, if you're at all interested in that, actually, you know, there's plenty of documentaries and stuff on the subject that you could dig up. And it is a pretty interesting. And a lot of it is just a matter of, I think, just a little bit with Edison. It was stubbornness and pride.
Yeah, that's what they showed.
Yeah, that really kind of kept him from seeing the truth of the matter and not seeing the bigger picture. I mean, with the DC power, you literally need a power station like every couple blocks in order to keep the power going.
Right.
You couldn't power the country
with
the DC system. But yeah, and that seems obvious, but I think it was just a matter of, I guess he was just thinking that, well, he'll come up with a better way of doing it later. But yeah.
Other movie I saw was Jojo Rabbit.
Okay, and this one I've not heard of,
The movie written and directed by Taika Waititi. Mm-hmm. It is set, it's like the last year before the fall of Nazi Germany, from the point of view of a 10-year-old boy who is in the Hitler Youth. And it is all about him believing that Nazis are superior, and that is, you know, and anyone who's a Jew is inferior. And he comes to discover his mom is hiding a Jewish girl in the house. He doesn't know what to do with himself.
Right.
He's like, but this is my mom, but this is what I believe. And it's a satire, and it's a comedy too. And Taika Waititi portrays Jojo's imaginary friend of Hitler.
Okay.
It's as ridiculous as it sounds, but it has this really interesting, thoughtful message while under the disguise of a comedy. So you get to see these very serious issues, but then the movie lets you stop, breathe, and even laugh at certain parts. So it's really well balanced, and I definitely recommend it.
Okay, interesting. All right. Well, the name, I always have a trouble with
Taika.
Taika, yeah, we'll stick with Taika. has done some brilliant writing.
Yes.
So if you're saying, you know, like, I'd be willing to give it a chance just because his name's attached, you know, because it's his thing.
Yep.
Taika Waititi.
Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
And then the third movie I saw was Zombieland Double Tap.
Oh, yeah. How was this? Decade after the original, right?
The big problem, big problem I had with it is it's 10 years later and the characters are exactly the same.
Mm.
They haven't changed. Like, the biggest one is,
I know character growth is a big thing with you. So.
Right, and they are exactly the same. Like, Jesse Eisenberg's character has been dating Emma Stone's character. And then the moment he proposes to her, she's like, whoa, that's a big commitment. So she and her sister hit the road and ditch them, just like they did in the first movie. And it's like, you've been with him for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? You wouldn't be like this. That's just absolutely insane. And then their personalities haven't changed one bit. Yeah. It's like, this movie needed to be made 2 years after the other.
This
I could have bought that.
This is very similar to a lot of criticisms that I've heard. Just that, yeah, it's just the world isn't any different than it was at the end of the last film.
The world actually is. The world has changed. The world has evolved. People work together. I really think that's a cool thing. It's not like, who are you? Who are you? And then there's warring clans.
Okay.
It's like people are helping people. But the characters have not evolved the way the world has. The zombies have evolved. They've gotten, some are smarter, some are dumber. Some do this to
faster,
trick you. Yeah. Right, so you're not dealing with, you know, it's hundreds of slow ones. You've got some slow ones. You've got some fast ones. You've got some that are physically stronger. Like, a bullet won't stop them. Five bullets won't stop them. You need a lot to take them out. if the characters had grown even a tenth of what the world had, I think that would have been a way more interesting movie.
Okay.
It hit like all the same beats of the first movie of like, this is what happened, and these two got separated, and then, you know, the character has to prove himself, and then the movie's over.
Yeah. That's a shame. It's been a long time since I saw the first one, probably almost a decade. So I don't remember it that well, but I remember enjoying it. I remember having fun with the movie. So yeah, it's a little disappointing that they finally do a sequel to this, and
played it safe is kind of how I felt, is they were like, all right, this is what people like, so just do it again. It's like,
well, maybe it's for people like me who haven't seen who hadn't seen the film for 10 years. They'll go and see this one and think it's hysterical because they don't remember that it's the exact same movie as it was before.
And it is a fun movie. It is entertaining. I didn't think it was bad. I was just disappointed that they just really played it safe. And there's one really great part where they're sneaking into this building, and then a character played by Rosario Dawson pops out and almost shoots one of them, and she's like, whoa, I almost murdered you. They're like, what? You know, when you accidentally think somebody's a zombie and you kill them, like somebody did to Bill Murray. Man, if I ever meet the guy who killed Bill Murray. I'm sure it was just somebody who made a mistake.
Yeah.
And then they even snuck Bill Murray into the end of the movie.
Oh, nice.
So that part, I'm like, all right, clever.
Oh, speaking of Bill Murray, he's officially signed on to this Ghostbusters 3.
Yeah, I figured he would.
Yeah.
They kept pushing that they wanted to get as many people from the original cast back. To me, I'm like, until you've got Rick Moranis,
that's going to be the big one. They haven't mentioned that one. I think just about everybody else has attached for at least a cameo or some appearance of some kind. I think even Ernie Hudson, I think, is in there. Sigourney Weaver. Yeah.
Obviously, yep. Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd's not doing anything. Yeah, exactly. Annie Potts, maybe? Probably. I don't know. Probably, I'm going to guess that she will probably at least show up for a day.
I mean, a lot of them showed up in cameos in the 2016 Ghostbusters movie.
Right.
It wouldn't surprise me that they would show up for this one. But if you can get Rick Moranis out of retirement, you've accomplished something.
Yeah.
The movie can be terrible, but if you can do that, you've accomplished something.
Just bring him for an afternoon.
Yeah.
Just, you know, who was that at the door, honey? You know, something.
Yeah, anything.
Keeping my everything in check with the, you know, future of Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. I'll always have that original, so, you know, do what you want. I'll watch it once. And then I'll go back and watch my original another 200-300 times.
It.
All right, yeah, that's all the news we got then. All right, we'll take a short break, and we come back, we're going to look at 1980s, The Final Countdown.
Are you looking for some great indie podcasts to listen to? Check out the Pod Nation list on podchaser.com, where you can find a list of great indie podcasts, get links to their official websites, and even listen to some of their episodes without needing to create an account or log in. Here's an example of one of the great indie podcasts you can find on Pod Nation.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ross from What's the Crack?
And I'm Rob. And this is our podcast, I Understood That Reference.
We cover all corners of the pop culture spectrum, including movies, comics, which is my favorite, games, and everything in between.
With our own unique mix of games, trivia, a little insight, all wrapped up in Irish accents.
And of course, the tin whistle.
So get up them stairs and download this podcast into your ears.
I'm Ross.
And I'm Rob.
And this has been I Understood That Reference. Available on Spotify, SoundCloud, Podchaser, and wherever else decent podcasts are available.
Yay!
So once again, for some great indie podcasts, check out the Pod Nation list on podchaser.com.
Okay, welcome back. Now this one, I'm going to go ahead and just put it out. I mean, we've always been a little bit of a spoilery podcast, but we've tried to keep it with we've tried to keep that in check a little bit. This one, I think, there's no way to talk about this film without just spoiling everything.
Yeah.
So just fair warning, if you've not seen the film, if you have any interest in seeing the film, go and watch it first before you listen any further. Because, there's so much of this that you can't like ignore certain plot points and stuff without and make any sense whatsoever. So,
right.
So you've been warned. Shall we start with a synopsis?
Yeah. Directed by Don Taylor. It's 1980 and the USS Nimitz, which makes its port in Pearl Harbor, is out to sea for a naval exercise. Suddenly, the ship and all of its crew are pulled into a vortex that transports them back to December 6, 1941, one day before the attack on Pearl Harbor. Now the captain is forced with a decision. Do they use their knowledge of what's to come to defend their country, or do they preserve history? That's the movie.
That is the movie, exactly. This was a film that I told you that was one that I remember watching many times when I was younger. I'm going to guess it was just often on TV, or we had we maybe recorded it off of cable or something and had a dubbed VHS or something like that. So it's just a film I remember watching several times. So yeah, this was just, and hadn't watched it in, I'm going to say at least 20 years. I maybe dialed it up once on VHS or something like that. It's been a long time since I've watched it and everything. But I figured, you know, I knew it was time travel. I knew you were a fan of time travel. But we'll throw it on the list. And we'll watch it. We'll see what we think. And we'll see what a few other people think, you know, online and whatever. So I did read, I don't know where to begin.
You have a great cast.
Yeah, let's just start with the cast right here. We got a fantastic cast, headlining by Kirk Douglas at full dimple.
Yes.
The co-starring with Martin Sheen.
Very young Martin Sheen.
Very young, a lot of hair Martin Sheen. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I guess even that old Martin Sheen still got a pretty good head of hair, unless that's a wig. I don't know.
Yeah, when he walked in, I was like, wow, him and Emilio look so much alike.
Yes. And then what was, I forgot to... Flortina?
Catherine Ross.
Catherine Ross. Yeah, yeah. I got to mention her. Charles Durning.
Yep. James.
James
Florentino.
Florentino. I think that's there you go. Name. He was an actor. I swore I knew him from something else, and it turns out I was wrong. I was the wrong actor. So I have no idea where I knew him from, but I thought I knew him from something else.
Okay.
But even before watching this film, I remember the last time I watched him, oh, that's the guy from that thing. And I went through his filmography. Ooh. I'm like, there's nothing here I watched. For some reason, I associated him with the dad from The Wonder Years, and it's not even close.
I can see why, yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of jaw, yeah.
Maybe that's it. It's just maybe that's it. Maybe that was it. We've got the one character actor, I didn't look up his name, who plays the Asian guy in like everything in the 70s and 80s. I think he was in MASH. He was a North and South Korean, depending on which episode.
Wow.
He makes an appearance in this film. I thought, you know, if you watch a lot of 70s and 80s television, you've seen this guy.
He knew how to get work.
Yeah. Yeah, phenomenal cast. When I threw this out online, you know, a lot of people jumped up and just no relation, Christopher Page. Says it's an amazing flick. He watched it a lot growing up, very similar to myself, and I've watched it a few times in the past couple of years, as recently as just several weeks ago. Clever 10 times over with a stellar cast. So he was a big fan of it. Scott Morris loves this film, and he has an original poster of this framed in the home.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Very cool. It would be a very cool poster to see. So, yeah, there's a lot of fans of this this film. And including Floyd, like I said, he was going to join us. Maybe this would be a good time as any to throw out his audio, and we can kind of jump off from there.
Hey, guys. Sorry I couldn't be with you today on this podcast of the Final Countdown. I was really wanting to be with you guys today, since this is one of my favorite films. Hmm. But unfortunately, something else came along, and I had to attend. So I thought I'd give you my thoughts. The Final Countdown was released on August 1st, 1980, and I was just entering my senior year in high school during that time. And so I was able to see it at the Eagles Theater in my hometown of Wabash, Indiana. So it was really cool seeing this on the big screen. And I was really enthralled by it because, well, it was science fiction, of course, being time travel, and it was an aircraft carrier going back in time. And I really think this was a good movie. Some of the critics during the time didn't like it, Siskel and Ebert said it was the dog of the year, which of course I don't agree with, because I thought it was really cool seeing this military hardware, seeing the Nimitz, seeing everything that goes on an aircraft carrier. And some things I really appreciated about the film were the fact that the crew knew something bizarre had just happened to them, and yet they accepted it. When they realized that they had gone back in time, they accepted the fact that it had happened, and they were going to do the best that they could to deal with the situation. And I really couldn't find much to dislike about this film, except for the music. I thought the music was a little on the simple side, but the highlight of the film for me was when the F-14s took on the Japanese Zeros. That was cool. Especially when the F-14s flew past the Zeros and they were caught in the jet wash. And it looked like they almost collided with each other. And then at some point, the pilots say, "Why are we messing with these guys?" And they were given the go-ahead to splash the Zeros. And to see the one taken down by the missile was really cool. And I often wonder how this story came about. And I almost imagine a couple guys just thinking, "Yeah, I wonder what it'd be like for F-14s to take on Japanese Zero. Hey, let's write a screenplay." I don't know if that's happened or not. But when I saw the film, I almost got the impression that was the whole reason for the film, was just to see that happen. And another thing that struck me with the film was when they mentioned that the Nimitz could take on the entire Japanese fleet. A single aircraft carrier from the 1980s could take out the entire 1940s Japanese fleet. That'd be tremendous firepower. Now, I don't know how true that would be, if they really could do that or not, but I could see it happening. And that was one thing in the film. Of course, in the film, they went forward in time when they were getting ready to take on the Japanese fleet. And I remember one of the guys made the comment, "Oh, we're going to let the Japs do it again." And of course, I realized that they didn't have the budget to depict that battle. And of course, if that would have happened, then we would have been dealing with an alternate history. But that would have been cool to see the Nimitz taking on the Japanese fleet. And I would like to see possibly a remake of this film done where that happens. They take on the Japanese fleet, they win, and how does that change history? With the Japanese not being able to attack Pearl Harbor. And then, does the Nimitz stay back in the 1940s and alter the technology of the future? Or does the Nimitz go through that time portal again and wind up back in the future to see an altered future because the Japanese never attacked Pearl Harbor? All kinds of possibilities going on there, and I would love to see a film deal with that. Now, the film did create what I consider kind of an unnecessary time paradox, and that is Owens, of course, wound up getting stranded in the past and became Mr. Tideman, who helped design the Nimitz. So if he helped design the Nimitz, how did the Nimitz come about initially before he boarded the Nimitz to go back in time to design the Nimitz? So I know it's one of those things that will just drive you crazy with time travel. But I kind of wonder about that. I didn't really think it was a neat twist, but I didn't think it was really necessary. But overall, I think the film holds up well even today. It's just so cool seeing that the military hardware, the jets, and the various aircraft. I know that this was a big plus for the Air Force in getting to show off all their military equipment and their skills and everything else. And of course, the cast was really great, did a great job acting. And overall, I just thought it was a really good film, and it remains one of my favorite time travel movies of this day. So I hope that gave you guys some good insight of my thoughts. And once again, sorry I can't be there with you, but I know you guys will do a great job with this film.
Well, thanks very much for sending that in, Floyd. And we'll start maybe kind of one of his last points first, and this is something that I think we had mentioned with the Philadelphia experiment, the idea of the circular time.
Cyclical time.
Thank you. So, yeah, that always happened. There was never a time when this guy didn't help build the Nimitz, that he right. didn't go back in time.
It's even said in the movie, because one thing I wish the movie did was have more of these conversations, but they seem to just kind of put one conversation in to take care of it and say, see, there, we addressed it, when they're thinking like, you know, could we stop this? Could we change history and prevent this attack? And you've got Martin Sheen being like, you know, we could alter history. And then you've got Owens, who's like, I believe there's only ever one history. So mm-hmm. even if we're back here, we're part of one history. And that's what the cyclical time travel theory is. It always happened that way. He didn't go back and alter history. He was always part of it. Mm-hmm. So the way for him to become the other guy and design the ship, and he was always there.
Right.
So that takes care of itself.
Exactly.
And there's even other little points throughout the movie, and those were the things that I liked most, of when they're like reading through the guy's papers of like, oh, right. this senator disappeared and nobody yeah. know how, and I'm sitting there waiting, I can't wait to see how that's going to work itself out and how that puzzle is going to fall into place.
Exactly. Yep,
there it did. It works.
Yep.
They really tied off all of those threads nicely.
Yeah, as far as a time travel not creating a paradox.
Yes.
A film not making a paradox. Yeah, they did a really nice job. Yeah, everything ends up working out the way it's supposed to work out,
right?
Per the history that they laid out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I read your Instagram and your Twitter and Instagram post and everything, and I don't disagree. You mentioned that you feel like we watched the whole movie, and so what?
Right.
And even Floyd touched on it a little bit, that he would have loved to have seen that
what
actually
happened.
What happened? Yeah, what would happen had they actually taken on the Japanese fleet? Had they prevented the bombing of Pearl Harbor? And that you don't see that. So mm-hmm. it's just, you do feel like you're like, oh, you're just sort of treading water that whole hour and a half. And then, okay.
It's over. Yeah, because the only thing that them going back in time does is leave Owens stranded in the past to become the millionaire in the future. Nobody else really learns anything. We're kind of following this movie from Martin Sheen's point of view a little bit. His character doesn't go through anything. He's the one saying, like, we could alter history. And then at the end of the movie, he's like, I guess it was better that we didn't. It's like, that's the lesson he needed to learn. Like, it doesn't go into how did this vortex happen? Why did it happen? But no one learned anything. The captain of the ship, he's not any different. He has no arc. Sheen has no arc. They observed this, and we observed them observing this.
Right.
And at the end of the movie, what was the point?
And this is actually very similar to some of the criticism. I sent you a link that there was, you know, Floyd mentioned Roger and Ebert. Gene Siskel, Roger Ebert. Siskel and Ebert panned the film. I found the link of Ebert's review of the film, and I sent that to you. And his views were very much similar with yours, what you're saying. And I don't completely disagree. I mean, you can look at it where it's kind of like, oh, well, what was the point of that? Because, yeah, nothing ends up happening. It is a collection of some great scenes.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really add up to a story.
Right. You came up with a really cool concept and did nothing with it.
Ebert, I think, mentioned it, or Siskel and Ebert, they also talked about it in a video review that they did of the film, that the film was based on a best-selling novel.
Mm.
And when they said that, it made me think that I might have gone back and read that. As soon as they said that there was a book, I'm like, I may have read that book, but it was probably, you know, 1985 or 86 or something like that. And I think maybe this would play out better in book form. You could do this idea because you could get into the characters' heads more. You could deal with a little bit more of the psychological aspect. You could deal a little bit more with the moral, you know, questions that everyone would have to face about what they, if they did this or if they do nothing. You could deal with that more in a novel than you can do on a film.
Mm-hmm.
So I could definitely see where the book might be the better way to tell this story. If you're going to tell a story of nothing happening, you could do that in a book better, I guess.
Sure.
Because you could get inside everyone's head and kind of see the conflict and everything, where it's, you can't really portray as well in film, certainly not in 1980. Maybe you could do a little better today. I mean, if you get somebody that could really write dialogue and you could actually direct a bunch of people sitting in a boardroom and have a final countdown, David Mamet's final countdown or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe you could get away with it, but yeah, definitely in 1980, it has to be pretty, get people in the seats and call it a day.
Right.
So the limitations of the time, I think, prevented it from doing a lot of what could or maybe should have been done.
Yeah. I just kept, like, there were a handful of, like, of good scenes surrounded by a story that didn't go anywhere. I agree with Floyd that scene of the F-14s fighting the Japanese Zeros, that was a really cool scene.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's kind of the scene that's, like, always in my head from this film.
Yeah.
From watching it ages ago, I always remember F-14s going against the Zeros.
Yeah, and I just kept thinking, like, man, those... Like, I wanted to get in the head of the characters of the Japanese pilots who are probably thinking, like...
What the hell?
We're going to die. What is that? That mm-hmm. is an alien spaceship that has just come down and is messing with us.
Right.
And the way they just keep, like, darting around back and forth, and it's like, yeah, we've got a machine gun on here that has a missile.
Yeah, I read some trivia that the planes, which actually weren't Japanese Zeros, I think they were some sort of German craft or something, but they were very similar. Oh, they're almost identical. But they were saying that they had to fly those planes flat out, and the F-14s had to fly at almost stall speed in order to get them in the same frame.
Sure, that makes sense.
So, like, and that's an aspect of this film that I do enjoy a lot, is the filming. They used the Nimitz. This wasn't, oh, we went to some museum and filmed some scenes or used stock footage or something like that. They filmed this all on an active warship.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really great with, you know, actual planes and the actual crew of the ship. When they film, when you see the boardroom, the captain's quarters and everything.
It's the real thing.
That's the real thing. That was the Nimitz.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, is really fun. That makes this film a lot of fun for me, is just seeing that. And maybe they kind of overdo it. You could probably do this film in about 45 minutes if you cut out all the planes taking off, planes landing, planes taking off again, people going down a gangplank, going people up a gangplank. There goes the elevator.
And it wouldn't be much later that someone was like, I think we could do this again, but better. And we're going to call it Top Gun. Let's do that.
Yeah. Let's get off the ship. Let's do it somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did really appreciate that. I just really liked that they got the corporation of the Navy, mm-hmm. and were able to do that kind of work and that kind of filming on an active ship. I think that was really incredible. Again, a little bit like in Philadelphia Experiment 2, I like that, you know, these planes, the helicopter, no one knows what in the world these things are.
Freaks them out.
Yeah, yeah. What is that thing that pulled us out of the water?
Right.
When the Charles Durning and Catherine Ross down there on the yacht, and they see the F-14s zip by, and we're like, what the hell was that? Look how fast.
Nothing goes that fast.
Nothing goes that fast. They climb. You know, they've been hiding it, and he's the, like, chairman of the finance committee of the military or whatever. He's like, this would have come across my desk.
Right. And, so mad about it.
Yeah. That was also very cool. Any film, really, I'll even watch Top Gun just for the F-14s, because I just think those are just some of the most amazing aircraft that have ever been invented. I love the look of them things.
Mm-hmm.
So the life on the on board ship, the scenes with the old versus the new, oh, a lot of fun. And that kind of what probably makes this film watchable more than anything.
Yeah. Those are the scenes that had my attention. And then mm-hmm. when it kind of slows down and they're just sort of like, where are we? Let's go find such and such. Let's do this. I'm like, I'm going to look at my phone for a minute. Kind of thing.
Right.
But the one thing I really wish they did was just kind of sit and have those conversations and hash. Like, there should have been an argument. Like, there should, because they had, you know, they kept most of the sailors in the dark, and but they kind of had like this little committee of the captain and all of his executive officers, and then Martin Sheen, who's there, he's a civilian who's there as like an efficiency expert, and they really needed to like have the debate of like, do we do this? Like, what does that mean for history? And I am not a historian, but like, I'm sitting there thinking like, well, if you stop Pearl Harbor, then the United States doesn't get into World War II. And what does that do to the United States? What does that do to Europe? What does that do to the United States? Does, you know, does that decimate Japan's naval fleet? Like, cause like, how many did they send? Can they recover from that? Does this affect the United States coming out of the Great Depression? Like, where was that conversation? This is an important conversation to have. Yeah. Like, yeah, it helps our country in this moment, but does it hurt the world in the long run?
And especially with someone with the character, the Owens, who is a historian.
Yes. He should have been like, no, no, we can't make, we have to let this happen.
Yeah. Think about how the advancements that came out of World War II that benefited the United States through the 50s
we wouldn't
and the
have
60s.
This ship if this didn't happen.
You know, the whole baby boomer generation wouldn't have happened you know, without the war. There's lots of arguments for letting history play out
as you know it to have happened.
There's probably more reasons to let it happen than to try to stop it.
Like, you could have done something cool if like they like little by little they start to affect history, and then a sailor vanishes, part of the ship is no longer there, things like that, and they're like, oh, we need to stop.
And that's something too, you know, the World War II is what brought about most of the advancements into atomic energy.
Right.
They're on a nuclear aircraft carrier.
Exactly.
That so, would not have existed.
Right. So you start affecting history, the ship starts to disappear. And then, so you have to like go through another vortex and stop yourselves from stopping history. Like, then you would get into time paradox, but then you have an interesting story that I can get behind. It's like, it gets to the point where like the ship is just one guy in a rowboat. And he's like, I got to stop this from happening.
We are stuck with limitations of the time. And yeah, just not being able to tell the story you really want to see out of this circumstance.
They came up with a cool idea and didn't think it all the way through.
Yeah.
And I would have absolutely been on board with, like, if you affect history, what does that mean? And then there's even the part where Martin Sheen's character is like, well, we can stop this and then we can fix all the things that we know went wrong because we know where the mistakes are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, this is a guy who's prepared to stay behind and try to fix the world.
Right.
I'm down for that movie.
Right.
Where's that movie?
There was one scene where I felt like kind of went nowhere that was interesting, because the first pilot that was in the air when the ship first travels back in time, he lands, he's unconscious, they pull him out, Owens comes and looks at him, and he has this look of shock on his face, and they wheel him away. You never hear about that man again.
Yeah, I was like, what?
Then they have almost the entire, their almost entire Air Force up in the air when they travel back forward through time at the end of the film, and they all land, and everyone seems fine. And I was thinking, did we miss a scene?
Yeah.
You know, was something, did they originally write something about that pilot and then realize, wait, that's not going to work later.
Yeah.
You know, we need to cut that or something.
Why didn't we get rid of that whole bit? Why didn't we just land him and refilm him getting out being like, I'm fine.
Right. Yeah. That was the only, I have to admit, out of all of it, that was the one scene where it's like, well, that literally went nowhere.
Yeah.
And that was the one bit in the film where I kept waiting for him to show back up some way. Yeah. I thought, oh, they're going to find he's an old man, or I was waiting for something, and it didn't happen because they set it up for something to happen, and much, I guess, like the rest of the film, nothing does.
Nothing happened. The other thing I kept thinking about getting in the head of the characters when they take the one Japanese pilot prisoner, and he's just like looking around, and he sees all of the jets, and he sees just the size of this aircraft carrier, he must be thinking like, oh, we're attacking this country tomorrow? Yeah. Oh, we're screwed.
I liked Charles Durning's the senator when he's reading like the captain and Martin Sheen's character, the you know, the riot act and everything, and he calls them rocket planes.
Yeah.
It's like, that's nice.
What else would you call them?
Exactly. I like that. That was nice. There's just lots of little bits in here where they're like, oh, you nailed it on that. Mm-hmm. You know, you made sure that this guy doesn't understand what all this is, and you didn't mess up and have him call it a jet,
right,
or anything like that. Or he did, though, would, I guess no one actually bothers to finally tell him it's called a helicopter or anything,
right,
because he just doesn't know what it is.
And that's another thing I wanted. I wanted someone to level with him and be like, this is going to sound crazy, but look around you. We are not from this time period. This was not made now. This was made, mm-hmm, 40 years from now. And we don't know how we got here, but we don't know what to. And then he could have been part of the conversation of like,
right,
so you know this is happening tomorrow.
Yeah,
right? But here's what happens as a result.
Or even let him know that he disappeared. I mean, tell
right,
him.
You vanish tomorrow.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Get him into the conversation and give it that little bit of a darker edge. It's like, I don't know what we're going to do with you, but you can't go home tomorrow, kind of
right,
thing. Absolutely. Yeah, you need that talk, I guess.
Right. Him and Owen should have like had a talk, and Owen should have been like, yeah, there's going to be this horrible attack tomorrow. And
it could have happened. You could have rewrote the struggle that they end up having at the end of the film when the senator hijacks the helicopter.
Right.
Owens, unfortunately, is, you know, he's now stranded on the island. But you could have had a struggle on the island or on the helicopter. And
right,
Owens could have like, look, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
You can't be here.
Right. But it would have been cool if he has that conversation with him and says, there's an attack, there's this, there's that. But this is what gets us into World War II, and this, you know, this is what turns the tide, and this is what happens to the country as a result. And he gets all this information, and it would have been great if he's like, let the attack happen. And it hurts him to say, mm-hmm, that, but he's like, yeah, I don't know what happens if we stop it. Like, that might not be the right result. Like, and then you just see, like, the captain of the ship being like, oh, okay.
But you know, out of, you know, there's 1,000 men on the ship, someone's father or grandfather,
mm-hmm,
died at Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Very possibly.
Right.
Or died in the war. They would have an opinion, a different
exactly,
opinion.
Exactly.
Maybe it's something that they might have been afraid to do in order to kind of show the idea of like mutiny among the Navy.
Sure.
They wouldn't want to, you know, obviously, sure, you can use our ship and everything. Maybe that's not the story you think the
right,
Navy's going to want you to tell on that ship.
And that's why you could have kept it to just like his group of people, like the captain's like top officers. Maybe that's just where the argument is. Because they, mm-hmm, even did show kind of like the dissent amongst the sailors a little bit. Because when they first go through the vortex, there's a whole bunch of them. They're like, well, what's going on? We just want to know what's going on. Why are we at like battle stations or general quarters? You know, and then one guy's like, you'll know when we tell you.
Right.
Well, when's that? When the captain says so. And they're all like, oh, of course, the captain.
Right,
and
right,
I'm sitting there thinking like, I don't think sailors would react that way. I think they'd be like, this is your post. Go to it.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, sure.
You could have at least seen the conversation, even if it wasn't a matter of we're going to storm the bridge and find out what's going on, kind of mutiny kind of thing. You'd still have them down in the mess hall arguing amongst themselves.
Right. And I think that's fine.
Yeah. And arguing about, even once they find out what's happened and the situation, what's the question, you know, that they have to answer now or whatever, have it. But in the end going, well, whatever the captain says is still going to be, you know, they're not going to like it.
Right.
You know, I lost, you know, an uncle and, you know, my grandfather or whatever in the war.
Because it's only a 40-year difference.
Right.
So it could have been a father if it's an older sailor,
mm-hmm,
you know, an uncle, anything.
Right. And that would actually, it would be neat to see an older sailor that go, you know, look, I lost family, whatever, in that war too and everything, but we're Navy officers.
Right.
The captain's going to make this decision and we're going to follow it.
Right.
And actually, he's the one that pulls the younger hotheads or whatever in line,
mm-hmm,
kind of thing. And that would have worked.
Just says to him, we're here because it happened.
Right.
Like, where would you be if it didn't happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, many of you wouldn't have been born.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, yeah, there was definitely a lot more you could have done with this film. And maybe it's just a product of its time that, that was too, some of these topics were too heavy of a story for a 1980 movie.
Sure. Let's make it now.
Yeah.
You can do that now.
This is one that I think you could manage to do an interesting remake of. I'm not a, usually a big proponent of remakes, but it's like just from the stories that, just the aspects of the story that could be told that we've just discussed right here.
Imagine.
Even half of those incorporated into an updated film.
Yeah. A 2019, a 2020 aircraft carrier. Like, you don't even need to put out the pilots. We're sending the drones. Like,
yeah.
Things like that. One drone's going to take out a good chunk of that fleet.
Right. I also had the thought, too, you could have done this story with USS Make Believe, you know, have a fictional aircraft carrier or something like that. They go back in time. They make the decision that they are going to stop it, whatever. Maybe they fail. Mm. Maybe we didn't know that the Japanese fleet was actually bigger than what we actually learned it was. They managed to take out a couple, but they ended up getting a lucky shot. Reactor blows.
Right.
All hands are lost. History still plays out.
But it always played out that way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That could have also been pretty interesting. And you still could have had maybe
the fights that we were hoping to see.
Exactly. So, yeah, that could have been interesting. You could tell that story as well.
Right. Because you have the one guy who's taken prisoner. He could have been the one that, like, somehow sinks the ship.
Yeah, yeah.
He figures out a way.
Oh, I imagine that he would, I mean, you take someone from 1940, you throw him, somehow find his way into the, you know, engine room of a nuclear power. I don't know. I'm guessing he might be able to find a way to push the wrong button.
Hit this, swing at that, shoot it.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. All hands lost kind of thing. And right. History plays out. So
the movie opens with like some like deep sea dive. And they're like, well, what's this sunk at the bottom? It's been here how long? But look, that ship's right over there. And then we're sitting there going like, uh-oh. And that's the opening of the movie.
Right. Yeah. They get the government guys in the X-Files,
right.
The black
just,
suits.
Nobody knows.
We want to talk to you about what you found on your dive. Yeah.
Yeah.
This could be a very interesting story to tell. And, you know, aspects, all these different things that we've talked about have been told in different ways in other films. It would be neat to kind of see them combined into this film. And instead of F-14s, you get the old F-18s or something, or you know, the stealth fighters. I don't know what the hell they have on board the ships anymore, but that would be pretty cool. Yeah, let's see what people in 1940 think of a Harrier, vertical takeoff jets. It's just
how did that happen?
Overall, though, I mean, what was wrong with the film? Detract so much that you didn't enjoy watching it, though. I still found it an enjoyable watch.
No,
it's a little bit like the Philadelphia Experiment.
Right.
You watch it and you go, this isn't good.
But I'm entertained.
I'm entertained as all hell.
Yes. Yeah. It had that. And, you know, it made me sit there and think, like, wow, there's so many better ways you could do it. And having those thoughts, it's a fun thought to have. And so I wouldn't have had it without the movie. Like, sometimes, you know, a movie can miss the mark, but still show you the mark.
Right.
And just by making me aware of what that is, good on you.
Absolutely. All right. Well, good. I'm glad it wasn't a complete waste for you then, anyway.
Not at all.
And I did enjoy watching it again. It's been a long time. Last time I watched it was, like I said, on TV or maybe VHS. This is the first time I've watched it off something like a DVD. So it's like watching a whole brand new film. It's like, wow, this is like so much better. It is so nice and crisp, and it's in widescreen.
Yes.
I'm sure the last time I watched it, it was, again, go back to that 4:3. You know, yeah. I watched it on an old TV.
Format it to fit your screen.
Yeah, exactly. So this is the first time I got to see it in widescreen, and it is a beautiful film to watch that way. I understand it looks really great on Blu-ray, and they include a lot good special features and everything.
Very
so
nice.
The behind the scenes and stuff. So that might be worth digging up. I might try to find that to watch some of the behind the scenes. That'd be interesting. But I think that's going to do it for this one. We do have a film in a couple weeks. Your pick. Is this Collateral? Is this the one we're going to watch?
2004 Collateral. We've talked so many Tom Cruise movies, but we haven't actually watched one yet.
That's true.
So I wanted to
I didn't even realize. I didn't remember that it was a Tom Cruise film.
It's kind of obscure. It's a different role for him. And yeah. So I'm interested to know what you think.
Yeah, it will be interesting because as an actor, it's kind of one of these things. I'm not a fan of Tom Cruise, but damn it if he doesn't end up in some really good films.
Yes.
Most of the films I watch with Tom Cruise, I sit back and go, damn it, I like that one too.
So this one's very different. It is not your usual action, blowing things up, but he's not even the good guy. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm going to like watching this then.
Uh-huh.
All right, cool. So 2004 is Collateral, and yes. In 2 weeks, looking forward to it. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Any more thoughts or anything on this film or any films we've ever covered, just go ahead and, you know, fire us a message. Come on to Facebook, Twitter, whatever. Let us know. And so I guess, yeah, that'll do it. We'll catch you in a couple weeks. Bye, everybody.